The ruins of Little Rock, Arkansas, February. The city never recovered from the nuclear blast inflicted on it in the death throes of the old world. Though the fires went out and the radiation dispersed, the only life to return permanently was non-human. Pine Bluff, closer to the breadbasket of southeastern Arkansas, replaced it as a transportation hub. Mountain Home and Fort Scott surpassed it as government and military centers. At the height of the Ozark Free Territory's progress, it could boast of little more than a dock and a ferry in a cleared-out patch of rubble, though even that was based on the north side of the river. The south bank heart of the city was avoided as if it were cursed earth. The new rulers have a grander vision of a rail, road, and river traffic hub built on the decayed remnants of the old. The rocks, as the locals call them, buzz with activity. The new human constructs have an anthill quality to them, low buildings made out of the blasted components of pre-2022 architecture. Some are already smoothed over by fresh concrete and white paint, and a more traveled eye might think of a little Greek town between hill and Aegean. The pilings and ruined bridges prevent barges from going farther up the river. Only small boat traffic goes west to Fort Scott, so Little Rock is an amphibian marshalling yard. Warehouses and tents under the new order's supply officers support the final mopping up and reorganization of the Ozarks. The river hums with traffic, and trucks and horse wagons fill transport pools as Consul Solon builds his capital. One building stands apart from the others, avoided by all but a few humans who work on its exterior and still unfinished upper floors. It is a Kurian tower, home of one of the new masters of what had been the Ozark Free Territory. Other towers like it are going up in Pine Bluff, Mountain Home, Hot Springs, and a dozen other smaller towns. Only Consul Solon has seen them all. Consul Solon. Little is known of him, save that he came from somewhere on the eastern seaboard. The name makes quisling captains break a sweat. Children are hushed with warnings that Consul Solon will hear about misbehavior. An argument can be stopped with a threat to take the matter to him, a turn of events that might mean doom to both sides. Consul Solon is the man responsible for keeping human order in the various provinces of what was the Free Territory. He answers only to his masters who have carved up the region, the dark princes of Fort Scott and Crowley's Ridge, the Springs, the Plateau, the Southern Marches, the Corridor, and other regions. Unlike much of the Kurian zone, Solon is trusted to ensure the defenses of all with a common force, rather than dozens of private armies in the hands of each overlord. Each Kurian has a Reaper representative at Solon's temporary headquarters at Fort Scott, the consul's nerve center, until the grander consular palace is built on the north bank of the Arkansas near Little Rock.
Get out of the way of the trucks. Like obedient little quislings.
Valentine spoke over his shoulder to Post, who signaled with an arm to pull the files off the paved road. Valentine leaned against the base of an old traffic signal pole on the outskirts of Little Rock and waved first to a motorcycle, then to the trucks as they passed on southward. Only 10 feet of the pole remained. The rest of it lay in an overgrown ditch atop an engine block, but ample enough for leaning. Valentine pulled off his helmet and rubbed his newly bald skull as he surveyed the column. The fuzzy-headed troops looked good enough in their quisling uniforms, though they marched poorly. They were all shorn of their hair, and even the elaborate mustaches and beards, the pride and joy of many of the soldiers of Southern Command, had been left on the dead leaves in the woods near Bullfrog Station. He had organized his footsore charges into 3 parts after leaving 70-odd men and women tired of the trail or unwilling to face the risks of operating in the enemy's uniform. At the lead were Finner's wolves, bereft of their beloved buckskins. They now wore the uniforms of the TMMP, an acronym for the Trans-Mississippi Mounted Patrol, the military police of Solon's newborn empire, entrusted with everything from guarding rail bridges to directing traffic. He, his officers, the Bears, and the Jamaicans wore the simple, shapeless uniforms of recruits, newly incorporated into the quisling AOT, Army of the Trans-Mississippi. At the center of the column, teams of 4 recruits each carried a quickwood beam on their shoulders, faking exercises under the shouted direction of their NCOs. Mrs. Smalls rode in one of the wagons with the camp equipment. Her husband and son led teams carrying the sick. The family had insisted on coming along so that Mrs. Smalls could have her baby in the hospital reported to be in Little Rock. Valentine thought she stuck out like a cardinal in a coven. Valentine watched the southbound trucks kick up gravel from the potholes with hungry eyes. In his days with the wolves, a lightly armed convoy of six trucks falling into his lap would have been cause for celebration. He would have waited for signals from the observation scouts, then pitched into the convoy if his scouts flashed the all clear. The Quislings were sure of themselves if they were sending trucks with nothing more than a motorcycle and sidecar leading the way down the long road to Hot Springs. General Martinez must not have been too aggressive in the eastern Washitas over the winter, and Bullfrog only attacked the occasional Quisling target at night. When the way cleared, Valentine got his column up and moving again. He stayed by his signal post, watching the men's faces as they walked toward Little Rock. A few looked excited, even eager to play the game, but others wore their fear like lead overcoats. They moved with the deliberative plod of men too tired and hungry to hope.
Let's step out a little more, Calgary.
Valentine spoke to a former guard, shuffling down the road with a hangdog expression.
We're having a hot meal tonight.
Calgary picked up the pace and smacked his lips, pleased for some reason to be recognized. Valentine felt better too. The weeks of starts and stops, double backs, circling, hunger and cold in the hills, and soggy, tireless camps, keeping 700 men out of the way of Quisling patrols, were over. They were right where Valentine had placed his finger on the map at the conference the night they left Colonel Meadows and Bullfrog, and his column had all solemnly shaved their heads, starting with Ankah's destruction of Valentine's shoulder-length locks. At first it had been play, learning the AOT and TMPP ranks, working on their imaginary stories as mercenary recruits in Arkansas, or up from the swamps of Louisiana or the woods of East Texas, looking to seek their fortune in the new empire Solon was raising. When they emerged from the hills and turned up the road for the old state capital, the men grew more and more anxious as the task became real, rather than just an imagined challenge in the future. At a rest halt, Valentine gathered the men and spoke to them as best as he could, relaying details of a plan he had kept from all save Ankah, though he suspected Stiakowski had an inkling. When the time came to speak to them, he had the men unharness the wagons and rest on a hillside, making a natural amphitheater.
You all know I'm a cat. As of today, you're all cats too. We're going to pretend we're Quisling recruits. Lieutenant Frum has phoned into headquarters here the happy news that he's finally met, indeed overfilled, his recruitment quota. We've got faked documents requisitioning us food, new clothing, shoes, and weapons. You've all suffered because of shortages of those things. Quislings in the ruins have plenty. We're going to trick them out of them, get across the river, and rejoin Southern Command. Just keep your mouth shut. One loose tongue could do us all in.
So, as they approached the ruins, Valentine needed something to get their minds off the situation. Most of the men were worried they were walking right into a prison yard, the intermediate holding place leading to the inevitable Reaper embrace.
How about a song, Jefferson? An old marching tune? Yellow Rose of Texas, anyone?
Huh?
Narcisse, I've heard you singing. Give us a song.
One everyone can sing?
If you can think of one.
Narcisse ran her tongue beneath her lips.
Hi, Lissy. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the...
The men took up the march with a will. While the song lasted, Finner fell in beside him.
Captain, you sure about what you're doing?
Valentine considered telling him to shut his mouth and obey orders, but the man who'd brought him south from Minnesota deserved better.
Commanding one of the worst marches in Ozark history? I'll let Consul Solon take care of transport from now on.
But from the ruins? Why not grab some boats and just cross at some quiet bend up river? From a distance, we'll look like a training march.
Stiakowski says the AOT is scraping men from every border station. Little Rock is a supply depot. New formations are brought there now to be equipped before being sent elsewhere.
If I had a suspicious mind, I might be worried that you were marching everyone into a prison yard. At a rate of brass ringing in a state in Iowa. If I had a suspicious mind, that is.
Would it make you feel better to know that I'm keeping your wolves outside the wire?
It'd make me feel better. Don't know about the rest of these lunks. How far outside?
About 7 miles. I want you to camp around Mount Summit. We won't be in Little Rock for more than 3 or 4 days, I expect. If this turns bad, we'll make for you if we can. You got a good view of the old Highway 10 from there. If I need to talk to you and can't come myself, I'll send on car or post. Just a nice ride in the country. We'll have one of these red bandanas tied on our heads.
Red bandanas, okay.
One more thing.
Valentine reached into his AOT officer's winter coat, a hanging mass of leather and canvas covered with bellows pockets.
Here's a report. Well, several reports. Send a couple of good, and I mean real good, wolves out to the Boston Mountains. They're to find whoever's in charge there and hand them over. A life weaver would be ideal.
I've got 8 men who've run courier for Martinez up north. They know where to go.
Keep those uniforms handy. You may need them again.
Very well, sir.
More responsibility than you wanted, I'm sure.
Finner rocked back and forth on his heels, keeping time to the music, fighting a smile.
Well, I'm getting used to it. I think I'm better at this than I thought. Hope you didn't think I was accusing.
No. Stay suspicious, Finner. If I'd been more suspicious when we hit the free territory... never mind. I want to pay this consul Solon back with some of his own coin.
Finner and his wolves left them while they were still in the hills. The road sloped down into the ruins. It began to rain again. Valentine put an old green towel over his shaven head, so the ends hung down like a bloodhound's ears, and seated an old Kevlar helmet over it.
This cover my scar? I'm worried I've made Solon's most wanted.
Pretty much.
Post tilted his head to see the thin white line descending Valentine's right cheek.
Yeah, shaded off anyway. You can still see the bit by your eye. It's the haircut that makes the real difference.
That wasn't a haircut. That was clear cutting.
Your teeth could use some coffee stains to complete the disguise. I've never known anyone who spends so much time brushing his teeth in the field.
Every meal, the way my mama taught me.
That memory caused a brief stab. The last time he'd seen them in Minnesota, he was 11, and she'd... stop it.
If you'd ever seen a nice, runny oral infection, you'd join me.
The column passed shells of buildings. Empty gas stations, strip malls with their glass fronts blasted out, foundations of homes that had burned and died grew closer and closer together as they came into the city limits. Gutted two-story structures gave way to piles of rubble, though the highway they walked on had been cleared. The debris lined either side of the road like snowdrifts. The column sighted a guard post.
Okay, Post. I'm gonna talk to them. They'll probably take me to the CO of the scrap heap. If I'm not back in 2 hours, or if you hear shooting, just fade into the hills. Split up if you have to.
Told me that, sir.
I'm repeating it. Nobody, not even Anka, goes in after me. We want them confused. Fighting will unconfuse them faster than anything.
A sergeant, with a corporal trailing behind like a heeled dog, stepped from a little shelter at the spectacle of a quarter mile of humanity walking down the road toward his post. They wore tiger-striped camis with AOT yellow insignia at the shoulder. Valentine kicked his horse on and trotted forward. Anka stepped in front of his horse and took the reins.
I heard you speaking to Post. If this turns, we're not to go in after you?
Not even you, old horse.
If I can't go in after you, my David, I am coming with you.
Post will need you if...
You'll need me more.
Anka's ears went flat, and the grog took a stance a little wider than a riverside oak, 400 pounds of roadblock. Valentine knew when he was beaten, and he didn't want it to look like there was a crisis in his command.
You'll be my bodyguard, then.
They approached the guard station. Valentine hailed the sergeant from horseback.
We're a day late, I know. Bad weather.
A day late for what?
The sergeant looked more at Anka than at either Valentine or the unarmed column far behind. Valentine was suddenly glad Anka had insisted on accompanying him. Valentine glared and turned his chin so the 3 pips on his collar showed. The sergeant saluted.
Colonel.
For outfit and transport, sergeant. Recruits up from Station 26. District Commander Frum's HQ.
The corporal checked a nearly blank clipboard.
You're Colonel Hassan?
From Louisiana.
Valentine opened a satchel. He passed down a wad of paperwork in an expandable waterproof envelope.
Route orders are near the top. You'll see supply, transport, OI for each recruit, and the rosters in the back. Not that you need to concern yourself with the rest. Don't think you have to check off every name that passes. My officers are responsible for everyone getting on the barge. I'll take the heat if anyone deserts.
The sergeant took another look at the ID card dangling from Valentine's breast pocket.
Didn't they have transport for you on the road? Colonel Lassant?
Too cheap. Besides, it toughens him up.
I'll let the general know you've arrived.
When you do, mention the weather held us up. Hell, I'd better come along in case they have questions.
Yes, sir. Corp, let the colonel and his stoop pass.
The sergeant disappeared into his guardhouse. Valentine dismounted and stepped over the chain hung between two concrete dragon's teeth blocking the road.
Up from Louisiana, sir? I used to serve in Texas myself. I can't wait to get back.
The corporal's face showed curiosity, not suspicion.
I'm here permanently.
The guardhouse consisted of the remains of some concrete and steel professional building. Men in loose dungarees were rebuilding exterior walls from the rubble, fitting together more or less intact cinder blocks around electrical conduit already laid. Others worked on a superstructure to the building, building something that looked like a miniature aircraft control tower. The workers all had bright orange zipper pockets sewn on the breasts of their overalls.
Forced labor?
You know it, sir. At first it was lots of force and not much labor, but they've settled down.
Good.
Valentine smelled the wet cement and waited, while the sergeant passed the responsibility up to lieutenant, and lieutenant to a radio. The lieutenant, a 30-ish man missing an earlobe, hung up the field phone and approached Valentine. The cat tried not to look relieved when he saluted.
Howdy, sir.
His smile revealed a mouth full of black-rimmed teeth.
I apologize for taking so long. I'm sorry, but there's some confusion. They know about the men, but Brigadier X-Ray Tango doesn't know you, sir.
Valentine felt a cold sweat emerge on his back.
I got my orders a month ago. Only thing to happen since then was a last-minute change. They had me set out from Fort Scott instead of Hot Springs. That got countermanded the next day. Turned out they wanted me at Station 26 to command these recruits.
Well, looks like when you got switched back, someone didn't follow up, sir.
Order, counter-order, disorder. Hot Springs had some confusion, too.
The lieutenant shrugged. He looked as if he was going to say something to Anka and thought better of it.
Brigadier X-Ray Tango wants to see you and your orders before your men get billeted, sir. And I suppose your grog can go with you.
Excuse me, son. X-Ray Tango? That an acronym you use up here?
No, it's a name. He's CO for this whole New Columbia area. He's new too.
I see. Wish they'd tell me these things.
If you'll follow me, sir.
I look forward to meeting the Brigadier.
Little Rock's collection of warehouses and piers was Station 3, according to the sign over the entrance. Station 3 also had a motto, Crossroads of the Future. Or so Valentine read as he stepped up the stairs and under a pre-2022 post and lintel in the neoclassical style. The rest of the headquarters building was a cobbled-together mix of wood floors, brick walls, and beam roof. Communications passed from the radio room upstairs through old-fashioned air pressure tubes. There was an audible shoomp as a new message arrived at the desk of an officer. Another wrote outgoing messages in block letters on square-lined paper and sent them shooting back upstairs.
The general will see you now, sir. Your assistant can wait outside.
He had the self-assured look of a ranker who was used to having officers at his beck and call. Anka waited for a nod from Valentine, then went back outside. The Brigadier General had a corner office with narrow windows filled with the first unbroken glass Valentine had seen in the ruins. What wall space wasn't taken up by windows had maps and bulletin boards on it. A liquor sideboard had trophies of figures in various martial arts poses instead of bottles. The desk smelled of recently applied varnish.
Coffee?
He had a neat uniform, with the same yellow star on the shoulder, and a hearty manner, under a haircut so close it resembled peach fuzz. Friendly but harassed eyes looked out from under bushy brows. There was something wrong with the face, though, and it took Valentine a moment to see it. X-Ray Tango's left eye was open wider than the right. It wasn't that the right was squinting. It was more that the left lid stayed a little farther open. Valentine liked to look at a man's hands after his face, and as he poured the coffee, Valentine looked at the work-roughened fingers. The nails were rimmed with a stain that matched that on the new desk, which was topped by a stenciled desk plate that read, BGDR General X-Ray Tango.
Thank you, sir.
Valentine sniffed the aroma from the thermos.
The real thing.
Privileges of rank.
What's all the hardware for? Boxing?
Some. Ever heard of Taekwondo?
That's like kickboxing, right?
A little. It's a martial art. Fought for my old brigade out west. Retired undefeated.
He held out his left hand. On the finger next to a wedding ring, Valentine saw a ruby red championship ring with SXT engraved beneath the single combat champion title.
Can I see your orders, Colonel?
Valentine sorted them and placed them in three piles on his desk.
Marching orders, supply requisitions, organization inventory for the recruits. Y'all like your paperwork up here.
That's a weak-looking OI.
Farm kids and men in from the borderland boonies, but they're good woodsmen. They know about moving through country and shooting.
That territory organized?
Not as well as it should be. Most of them are the usual assortment of malcontents who chose carrying a gun over using a shovel in a labor camp.
General X-Ray Tangle's left eye twitched. A quick three-blink spasm, the third slower than the first two.
You're moving kind of stiff, Colonel. Injury?
Came off a horse a couple weeks ago and broke a rib. Just got the cast off.
The eye twitched again, and X-Ray Tango took in Ankah's formidable frame.
Why the bodyguard?
The grog? SOP down there for anyone above captain, sir. Bodyguard. Master at arms. I don't know what you'd call it up here. He shakes up soldier and civilian alike.
Kind of like your own personal hood, huh? Not sure if I like that. A good leader shouldn't have to dole out summary justice. How often you use it?
I lost one on the way. Had to shoot a deserter. Just a homesick kid. I didn't know what kind of paperwork I had to fill out, so I made a report. Countersigned by my second in command and the dead man's sergeant. We don't have dog tags, but his work card's attached. That's how we did things in Natchez.
That's the least of my worries, Lassane.
Why's that, sir?
To be honest, we've no record of you coming here. By Kerr, I need you, that's for sure. All this rain with the spring thaw, I've got a command and a bunch of warehouses that might be underwater in a day or two. Consul Solon has zero, and I mean zero, tolerance for wheeling and dealing. So I'm gonna have to do some checking. No offense to how they do things in Louisiana.
The eye twitched again. Blink, blink, blink.
Don't follow your meaning, sir.
Started out in the Oklahoma High Plains, Colonel. Not the most exciting place for duty. We had a captain out there, got bored with his duties, and got himself a transfer to Lake Meredith. And when I say got himself a transfer, I mean he wrote one up, signed it, and moved his troops 100 miles just for a change of scenery. He figured he'd earned it after a lot of dusty years watching railways and cattle wallows. So happens he was a good officer, and the higher-ups let him get away with it. We've been after Frum at Post 26 for months to meet his recruitment quota for the year, and all of a sudden, he's not just met it, he's overfilled it with a Louisiana colonel to boot.
Valentine sipped his coffee, straining to keep his hand steady. The story was so close to his own that he listened for men moving in behind him to put him under arrest, but all he heard from outside the office was typing.
Now, could be you heard down in your Louisiana boonies that with the Ozarks getting pacified, there'd be opportunity under the consul's new system. Could be you decided that the way to get a general's star would be to make yourself useful up here. Could be you knew that there were 57 brass rings given out over the last year since we went in once and for all. Not just the generals either, but we got our share.
X-Ray Tango opened his shirt, and there, hung from a golden chain, was a brass ring. Blink, blink, blink. Valentine thought it odd. The brass ring types he'd met usually displayed them on their right ring finger. The token indicated special favor in the Kurian order. A wearer and his family would never be at risk of being sent to the Reapers.
It happens that I like a man with ambition. I like an officer with initiative. I also like to hear the truth. I've got a way of knowing when someone's spoon-feeding me horse shit and telling me it's applesauce. Leaves a bad taste in my mouth. So fess up. The orders for you to come up here didn't go through Fort Scott or Hot Springs, did they?
Valentine's bowels had turned to liquid as he sat in the chair, as if Narcisse had spiked the coffee with her emetic, and he decided to admit to as much as possible.
You're close to the truth, sir, but I don't want to say much more. I've had some help along the way, and I don't want people who've covered for me to get into trouble, least of all anyone under me. My men, except for some of the new ones, trust me. I'm responsible for them, and if someone has to go to a hood because of this, it should be me. It's my idea.
Valentine felt strangely relieved with his confession. But would a partial truth set him partially free?
No reason for it to go that far. I've just had over 500 strong backs fall into my lap. I should be shaking your hand and buying you a bottle of Old Kentucky MM. You're in Little Rock, or New Columbia now, and I'm the lead longhorn in these parts. If your friends in Louisiana start asking about you, we'll play dumb. But I expect you to fit into the system here, or you'll wish you'd stayed in the swamp. Here's my command.
X-Ray Tango stepped over to a map on the wall. It was a copy of an old Free Territory map, redrawn to take into account the realities of the New World.
This rock heap used to be the center of Arkansas. It will be again. We're at the crossroads of the river traffic and the road artery running the eastern side of the mountains here. Makes an X, as you can see. Within a year, we'll have two new rail lines, one running down from Memphis over to Tulsa, the other down from St. Louis to Dallas. So there's a new X going to be laid over the first. A line branching down from Kansas City to Fort Scott, and Fort Scott connecting Tulsa and points south and west is already running. Consul Sullen had us working three shifts till that was done. But Fort Scott was promised to the higher-ups in Oklahoma in return for their help with this. The new capital will be right here, at the intersection of all those X's. This will be the nerve center of the Trans-Mississippi Confederation.
How many smaller states are there? I see a lot of borders.
26 in all. Each one has its higher-ups. Most just have one running the show. In this system Consul Sullen's got rigged, we're supposed to call them governors. But as you know, it's really Solon's land. Who's obeying who remains to be seen. He's keeping the peace between them, Kerr knows how. He's even planning to set up some kind of court to work out disputes between them. You ever heard the like?
No, Natchez was...
I've heard it's a snake pit.
I wouldn't say that, but there were feuds all the time with the New Orleans Kerr. They could use a court down there, too.
Out in the High Plains, I spend more time fighting with the boys out of Santa Fe than the guerrillas and saboteurs.
I've been bushwhacked myself for scavenging in the wrong place at the wronger time.
Can't say how you'll figure into this just yet, Lassane. Right now, I need disciplined labor more than anything, with the river rising. These hillbillies who used to be here weren't much on civil engineering. They didn't care if a bunch of ruins flooded. I've got two regiments of infantry and a fair amount of artillery, but it's on the other side of the river. They're still fighting in the Boston Mountains, and that's Solon's reserve. I don't dare use them. Over on this side, I've got a few companies of reserves, my engineers, hospital, and headquarters, and I'm hip-deep in quartermasters getting the river traffic where it's supposed to go. There are military police for the prisoners working on the riverbanks, and I'm trying my damnedest to get more.
I'll put my men to work right away. I have a few with engineering experience. Sooner the job's done, sooner we get activated.
You want a combat command?
You bet.
X-Ray Tango's droopy eye narrowed.
We'll see, Colonel. I'll have a lieutenant show you to a clear spot. You'll be in tents for a while, but I can get you running water and some gas stoves. If your men want better quarters, you'll be building them. You'll have more water than you can imagine shortly. Now, you get to spend the rest of your day filling out paperwork. This time it'll get stamped by me.
Any chance of getting north of the river and seeing some action, sir?
You are eager, aren't you?
Want one of those rings. You give another brigade a break, sir. They've been in the mountains all winter. They'd appreciate the time to refit.
Blink, blink, blink.
Let me run my command, Lassane. You'll get your chance.
Of course, sir.
What kind of action have you seen?
Small-scale stuff, General. Skirmishes here and there. I've done a lot of ambushes and guerrilla hunting. I've only heard cannon fired in training.
Let's take it one step at a time. According to your OI, most of your command is green. Or is that falsified, too?
They're a mixed bag, but I have some good NCOs. The men can shoot. You'd be surprised.
I look forward to finding out what you can do when the river's back under control. One more push when spring comes and things will be over with. It'll just be a matter of smoking out the remnants. Now, I'm a busy man. Otherwise, I'd pour you another cup of coffee and warm it with a touch of bourbon. I'd like to hear stories about life in the swamp. You have any questions?
Not a military one, sir. Your name, sir, it's...
Different, isn't it? My mother was a POW when she had me. I got put in an orphanage in Amarillo. There were a fair amount of us. The orphanage was run military style. It even had a military name. Youth Recovery Center 4 was where I spent my salad days. They used the initials of our mothers, so I was always X-Ray Tango. Never found out if I'd been given a first name. My wife used to call me Scotty. She said I looked like one. The dog, I mean.
Used to, sir. I apologize, sir. That's personal.
It was quick. Heart attack. That's why I transferred to Solon's command. Couldn't take the flats out there anymore.
Blink, blink, blink.
Too much empty.
An adjutant entered with a clipboard full of flimsies of radio communiques. Valentine resisted the urge to glance at the top one as the soldier passed.
That'll be all the same.
General X-Ray Tango lifted an order off his desk and dashed off a signature, then stamped it.
Corporal, Give this to Lieutenant Greer. Oh, Lassane. Good thing you're honest with me and I like the shape of your shadow. I had two orders on how to deal with you sitting on my desk. The one going to Lieutenant Greer says he's to feed and uniform you and your command. The other said to shoot you and your officers. Staying on my desk just in case.
Lieutenant Greer was a sandy-haired monosyllabist with the intent features of an owl. Though a young man, he was hard of hearing.
You don't like the junk near the river at your camp, sir.
He spoke English as though it were a foreign tongue. He walked beside Valentine, leading the column through the ruins. Structural steel beams and plumbing fixtures poked out from the debris like leaning crucifixes in an old frontier cemetery.
Not all bad. Flat ground, good drainage, old sewers too.
They passed what must have once been multi-story office buildings at the heart of the old downtown. One remaining spindle of girders had been left, and most of a tower clung around its central support. The spiral minaret reminded Valentine of the long, pointy shells of turret snails he'd seen on the beaches of the Caribbean. Laborers walked up the endless stairs winding around the structure, bearing bricks to the top.
What's that supposed to be?
The residence. 11 floors.
Of?
Valentine paused and glanced around.
The governor?
Greer averted his eyes and hunched his shoulders as they passed wide of the building. Valentine saw armored cars parked before it, covering the cleared streets outside the beginnings of a wall. A Kurian tower, sticking there like a knife in the heart of the Free Territory. Valentine's throat went dry. Greer murmured something so quietly, Valentine thought he was talking to himself.
Two in the city, brothers or maybe cousins, don't know the names, 8 and 5.
Valentine guessed this last to be the number of reapers each controlled, respectively. Reapers that needed feeding.
13. Unlucky.
Don't worry now. Still plenty of prisoners. Much work to do. For now, they take only hurt and bad sick. This big state. I come from Indianapolis. 6 years ago, bad drought, many farms died. Other blood men from the hills and south came, stole people. Then they fed on us in army.
That's a hard piece of luck. This is a sweeter situation. That's why I came.
Yes, sir. Duty with a future here.
They continued north, almost to a little finger of a hill separating river from city, and reached their camp. It was a former city block, now called Duncan Dew, according to the old sign propped up among the rubble. The street had not even been cleared yet, and among the bulldozer tracks there were little piles of debris and hummocks, but it was still preferable to the mountains of shattered concrete elsewhere in the city. The block was circled by 9-foot posts, and rolls of barbed wire had been left out to rust in the rain.
Was to be prison camp, sir, for after the last push this year, but you can use.
Valentine wondered if this wasn't another warning from X-Ray Tango that any nonsense would convert him and his men from allies to inmates in short order. He and Post trailed Greer around as he pointed out the water taps, already flowing, and the sewer outlets.
Provisions tonight, sir. Uniforms tomorrow. Maybe stoves and fuel day after. Here's paperwork, sir. I fill some. You the rest, please, sir. Mostly just signatures. Officers can billet in garage or stay in tents with men. Up to you.
Garage?
You see soon. Underground parking. Like bunker, you know? Meet others. Good food, good times.
We'll drop by. Let us know when happy hour starts.
Huh? Happy hour, sir?
Never mind. I'll be here tonight, getting the men settled in.
They watched the men file into the camp, followed by the wobble-wheeled wagons. Jefferson cursed a blue streak, trying to get his team around a clump of reinforced concrete, its rods threatening horse leg and spoke alike.
Question, sir?
Who's in charge of supplying us?
Commissary Sergeant Major Tucker, in Quonset Hut behind headquarters. Good man. Answer all questions. Usual answer is yes.
Tucker was more than just a good man. He appeared that evening like a horn of plenty. He showed up in the shotgun seat of a roofless, antiquated Hummer, interrupting the men as they were setting up their tents in military rows.
General's orders!
Tucker pointed at his cargo.
Fresh bread, fruit, and veggies just up from the Gulf. Spring potatoes, winter cabbage, first peas, and even apples. We've got beer and cask, but before I can issue that, we need to see what kind of workers you are.
The men forgot they were in the heart of an enemy camp enough to start cheering as he handed out the bounty. Cured side meat lay in baskets revealed as eager hands took the food.
Whew! Whoa, y'all you'll need the showers rigged pronto, boys. Ever heard of field hygiene?
We've been on the road for 3 days.
Valentine stepped forward to help hand out the foodstuffs.
You're up from Louisiana, they tell me.
Sergeant Tucker, the smell's unfortunate, I know. We need some wash tubs and soap more than anything.
Coming tomorrow, sir.
I'm only about half armed as well. I'd like to see that rectified.
Oh, guns are a problem, sir. You'll get a few for marksmanship to familiarize yourself with our models. But we don't have enough to arm all your men at the moment.
That's unfortunate. Suppose there's an emergency and the camp has to turn out to defend itself.
We have contingency plans, sir. When y'all are properly integrated into the general's command, you'll be outfitted. But there's too much work to do here for now. You'll be in reserve a few months at least.
Months? I thought the fight was coming sooner than that.
I can't say, sir. Those were the general's orders. He was specific about it.
Valentine recovered his mental equilibrium.
I haven't been fully briefed yet.
Sorry you had to hear it from me, sir. But be glad for it. You'll have a better time back here. Those boys up north are dug in like ticks on a bear. Burning them off isn't going to be a summer picnic. If you saw the hospital, you wouldn't be so willful about it.
Months. Valentine spent 2 hours trying to fall asleep, staring at the silhouette of the Quickwood center pole in his tent. Using Quickwood to form their tents seemed as good a way as any to hide the material in plain sight. Such a small thing, the Quickwood beam, but it was the source of all Valentine's hopes. He saw some of the men touching it as they passed, some with a reverence that brought to mind odd bits of mental flotsam about medieval pilgrims and alleged pieces of the True Cross, others caressing it as though it were a lover in passing. Even Post, who'd never show any other signs of superstition, would give the tent pole a double rap with his knuckles whenever he passed it in Valentine's tent. The ruse might last 6 days, but more than a few weeks was out of the question. Sooner or later, some fool would let something slip, a face would be recognized despite the shorn heads, and assumed identity would be dropped. There would be questions, and then, when he didn't have answers, more questions. From what he'd seen of the docks and warehouses, they were well guarded against any attack he could mount, armed as he was, even with his bears. The Quickwood had to make it to Southern Command, where it would be used to kill reapers instead of hold up waterproofed canvas. But if he simply decamped and marched across the river, his chances of ever seeing the Boston Mountains were negligible. Realizing sleep was impossible, he rose, dressed, and found an axe. He wandered around the camp, nodding to the men on firewatch, until he found piled cords of firewood. David Valentine split fulls into quarters and quarters into kindling until he could drop into his bunk, body soaked with sweat even in the cold night air, muscles aflame, fretful thoughts finally beaten into numbness. The Arkansas River, February of the 48th year of the Kurian Order. Part of the defense strategy of the Free Territory was simple inaccessibility. Southern Command tore up railroads leading into the Ozarks, broke roadbeds down, wrecked bridges, let forests grow over airstrips, and flooded bayous long since drained by the Corps of Engineers. As part of this strategy, Southern Command rendered the Arkansas River unnavigable by destroying locks, sinking snags, and pulling down levees, blocking invasion by water east from the Mississippi and west from the old river port on the Verdigris east of Tulsa. 400 feet of elevation from the Mississippi to Fort Smith were made impassable to anything other than shallow draft traffic, thanks to the sand-clogged river and vigilant guards at Arkansas Post and Fort Gibson. While both strong points changed hands several times over the course of the Free Territory's star-crossed history, they were always eventually won back. Until now. In their months of occupation, the Kurians have opened the river to some traffic between Little Rock and the Mississippi. Small barges are again making the ascent to supply the armies still fighting in the mountains. But nature takes her part in the conflict as well. A wet winter, early spring, and heavy rains have raised waters to levels not matched since the floods of the 1920s. The last controls, hydroelectric dams at the Jed Taylor and Dardanelle lock and dams, were destroyed as Southern Command fled to the mountains, leaving the river open to flooding. Only the fact that the levees were destroyed years ago, siphoning some of the water away in secondary floods, has saved the new masters of the ruins so far. But the river is rising. The irony of the situation was not lost on David Valentine. He drove his men, enlisted and officers alike, in an exhausting war against the swelling Arkansas River. A wall of sandbags was the battle line. On the one side of the miles of sandbags, pumps and drainage ditches were the war materials of Consul Solon's military millstone, now grinding Southern Command into chicken feed. On the other side swelled a God-given natural disaster waiting to strike a blow for their cause, potentially more damaging than even batteries of heavy artillery with the town in their sights could hope to do. Nonetheless, he threw his men's bodies against the river. Even Ankas stood waist-deep in cold water, hardly stopping to eat, plunging his long arms again and again into the base of the levee, digging sluices for the pumps. The endless labor inured his men to living hearth-to-hearth with the Quislings. When Tucker and his men handed out new AOT uniforms, a model of sea greens and browns, some with the look of reclaimed and re-dyed clothing about them, Post brought them in groups before Narcisse, who marked their foreheads in a voodoo version of the anointing of the ashes. She smeared them with a red paste and flicked them about the head and neck with a powdered white feather, chanting in her Haitian Creole. Even Stiakowski submitted to it in good humor, after Narcisse explained to her and Valentine that it was just for show. The paste was winterberry with a touch of poisoned sumac to give it a tingle. Narcisse promised the men that the ritual would help them fool the enemy, guard their tongues, and curse any who deliberately gave away their true allegiance, so that any reward given by the Kurians would turn to ash and their heart's blood to sand. Valentine watched Imdaw's face as he underwent the anointing. There would be a brass ring for him and land of his choosing if he were to go over to his old masters, and it would be so easy, so very easy. Just a word or two in the right ear at the wrong moment. The healthy respect for Narcisse's powers Imdaw had gained when she changed the old Quisling's bowels to the biological equivalent of a fire hose showed itself when he jumped at her touch as though she carried electrical current. Valentine had considered assigning someone unobtrusive but reliable, like the Texan drover Jefferson, to keep an eye on Imdaw. But the old Quisling had been as willing as any on the march, and complained not at all. Valentine was inclined to trust him. Keeping track of worries in the current predicament was like following individual ants pouring from a kicked-open hill. Mrs. Smalls was the only one accepted from the ceremony, though Narcisse ministered to the pregnant woman as midwife and cook. She and her husband were confined to their tent. The baby had dropped, and they were expecting it to be born any day. Valentine had Mrs. Smalls on his mind as he paced back and forth at the drainage ditch, watching the next two truckloads of sand and bags make their way to the waiting, shovel-wielding prisoners.
Your shift was over a half hour ago, sir.
She passed him a hot cup of roasted chicory coffee, sweetened to a syrup with molasses. The mixture had been passed around as the closest thing to real coffee they could make in quantity. Valentine gulped and looked through the steam at Stiakowski. Even dripping wet, she managed to look neat. Though there were circles under her eyes, made worse by pallid skin and close-cropped hair, Stiakowski had been tireless at the riverbank, still working when men twice her size dropped in exhaustion.
I can go a couple more hours. Do two more dry in your bunk, Stiakowski.
He swiveled his gaze to the prisoner with the shovel.
Hey, you two there! Don't pack them like sausages or they'll burst under pressure.
Sorry, sir.
He wore a faded guard uniform with POW stenciled in orange across his back and down his pant leg.
Sorry, Stiakowski. You were saying?
Nothing, sir.
Then move along. I'll cover your duty.
Neither of you ever quit.
Stiakowski looked down at Anka. The grog grasped a 70-pound sandbag in each hand and stuffed them at the bottom of the levee.
He's like a machine. I don't worry about him. You, on the other hand...
can take care of myself. As you said, I spend my time shouting, not moving earth.
Then why do you have mud up to your neck?
Clumsiness.
I've seen you walk across a 2-strand rope bridge without breaking stride. I doubt it. You'll spend 8 hours in your bunk, Stiakowski. That's an order.
She lifted her chin and opened her mouth. Her cropped hair would have bristled were it not wet, but no sound came out for a second.
Yes, sir.
Post and a corporal were trotting toward them along the rim of the drainage ditch.
Sir, we got a big bulge up next to where it's reinforced on that old park bench. Looks like it'll give way any minute.
Take Roger's squad and shore it up.
It's in Captain Erford's section.
Post was referring to the Quisling responsible for the length east of Valentine's.
He's dealing with a broken pump, hasn't noticed it, and none of his prisoners are anxious to bring it to his attention, know what I mean?
Shore it up, Will.
But...
I'm not used to giving orders twice.
Valentine's voice was not a shout, but not conversational either. He'd never raised his voice to Post before, outside the din of battle. He rounded on Stiakowski like a bar brawler who's felled one opponent and is looking to loosen some teeth in another.
Speaking of which, why aren't you in your bunk, Stiakowski?
Sir.
They both backed away to obey. Valentine raised his mug. Some artist had painted a yellow star on it and added, "We build New Columbia, crossroads of the future," in neat brushstrokes before glazing it. The incessant rain had already chilled the coffee. It tasted like dry leaves and old gum.
Woo! Damn!
A whooping shout of joy came from his section of levee. Valentine saw two bedraggled men. The one with a hat belonged to his group. The other had the orange POW stenciling. Both men had skin the color of milk chocolate, long, handsome faces, and similar silhouettes as they embraced. Valentine had feared a moment like this.
Anka.
He began trotting over to the pair as the one in the POW fatigue spoke.
Lord bless Dake! I knew you made it out of the pocket! What good, Slick?
Valentine thought his soldier's name might be Abaca. Dake Abaca sounded right in his head. He heard Anka's squelching footsteps behind. An alert sergeant also hurried to interpose.
You there, Abaca, come over here.
Abaca put a hand on the arm of his relative.
Alone! Anka, keep an eye on that man.
Be cool, Clip.
He approached Valentine. The sergeant, a former supply clerk named Roybison, joined him, instinctively placing herself facing both Valentine and Abaca.
Sorry, sir. That's my brother, Clipton. 3rd Cavalry Regiment, Light Artillery. He's smart and he's...
I don't need his cue file, Abaca. Roybison, if those two speak again, you'll wish you'd been bit with Rabies 6. Got me?
She blanched, but answered quickly enough.
Yes, sir.
Sir, we could...
Private, we're going to talk to your brother in my tent. You, me, and Anka. If you don't do exactly as I say, Anka will kill your brother and you'll spend the rest of our time here in a tiger cage, near the dike. So if it breaks, we'll get a nice loud warning before you drown.
Abaca's eyes flamed, and Valentine stared until Abaca dropped his gaze to his feet.
We go about this right, your brother will be in your tent with you tonight.
The private and his sergeant both unclenched their legs at that. Valentine forced a friendly smile.
We'll need some play acting out of you first, Abaca.
The form read, "Limited Pardon. This document grants provisional immunity for any and all previous offenses against the Kurian Order. By signing it, the pardon applicant renounces, completely and irrevocably, its former affiliations, begs forgiveness for its crimes, and asks for the privileges and benefits of fellowship in the human community. I, blank, seek a place within and protection of the Trans-Mississippi Extended District. I agree to obey the orders of my lawful superiors who will take my life forfeit if I violate this oath. Sworn this day, blank, of month, blank, year, blank. Signed, witnessed, recorded, and sealed." A lined-off empty space in the lower right-hand corner waited for a cheap foil seal. Valentine sat at his field desk, a slightly warped office table resting unsteadily on the plywood floor of his tent, hating himself for what he was about to do. This bit of play-acting was the only alternative, and if it went wrong... Cross that bridge when you come to it. The form, placed with a dozen others like it on a clipboard complete with tied-on ballpoint pen, rested next to an oversized shot glass. The POW, his eyes shaded from the single bulb by his thick brow, stood before him. Abaca stood behind, his sergeant just outside the tent. Anka rested on his knuckles, a little stooped over in the confines of the wood frame and canvas tent. The drizzle outside grew heavier and lighter in fits, reminding Valentine of the sound of gentle surf on the Texas coast.
Scotch?
He'd been told it was his whiskey ration. The designation just sounded better.
Cold work out there.
You signed this?
Clipton Abaca looked to his brother. The skin was tight against his face, and Valentine saw his brow twitch.
Had to. It was that or the boxcars, and I wasn't getting shipped to Dallas on a last ride. This is good duty, bro. Food's better and...
Valentine tapped the clipboard.
Son, the war's over here. We're reorganizing. It's better to be reorganizing than reorganized.
I'm at full complement, but your brother asked very nicely. He's a smart man, and I always have room for another smart man.
Clipton Abacus shook his head, looking at his brother rather than Valentine.
6 years in, you'll get an allotment if you want. I'm about to make your brother a corporal, and I'm sure you'd rise too. Find a nice gal, or you can have your pick out of the pens waiting to go. It's hard, but it's life. Any POWs we don't assimilate...
Valentine waved his hand out at the dripping water. Abaca broke in on the rain.
Do it, bro. Don't forget about Ma and Sense and our cousins. They're caught up in this somewhere.
Clipton Abaca picked up the brimming shot glass and smelled the whiskey appreciatively.
Us being dead won't help them.
Better than strained brake fluid.
You know it.
The parolee tipped it into his mouth, put down the glass next to the clipboard, then with a lunge, spat it at his brother and Valentine. He sent the clipboard skittering across the table at Valentine, who blocked it with his palm.
Fuck both of you! Throw me!
Anka grabbed the man in a bear hug and dragged him out of the tent screaming and kicking. Valentine heard a few faint obscenities as Roybison put him in handcuffs. Abaca looked out at the sight of his brother thrust into the mud, Anka's sheep-sized thigh pressing into the small of his brother's back. Anka and Roybison dragged him off.
Why didn't we just tell him
the truth?
He refilled the glass and pushed it toward Abaca.
We could have, but your brother's doing more for us back behind barbed wire.
How's that?
They have spies among the prisoners, I'm sure of it. Your brother talking about what a rotten, traitorous son of a bitch he's related to backs up all our stories.
Abaca smelled the whiskey, looking more morose than his brother. Valentine thought he'd be sprayed a second time, but Abaca drank it with a grimace. He shook his head.
I'm proud of Clip, sir. I'm proud of him. Don't know if I'd done the same. I'm damn proud.
How do you feel about yourself?
Like a shit.
Welcome to the cats, Abaca.
You don't owe me an explanation, sir.
It was later, and Valentine and Post were still in Valentine's tent. Valentine felt exhausted and wrung out. The faint smell of his whiskey shower made him feel like a barfly at last call.
But why didn't you just let the levee breach?
The river was under control. The water level had stabilized. Reports from upriver said that within a day it should fall. The rest of the struggle would be a holding action. Valentine wanted to be on his back in his bunk, but he couldn't be that discourteous to a subordinate, friend or no. He sat on the edge of his cot, rubbing the prickly growth on his skull. Anka made a clattering noise outside as he fashioned an oil drum cook stove that could double as a water heater.
We're being watched. No, it's not one of my feelings, it's logic. It may be X-ray Tango or the bat-winged bastards in the tower. I don't know if they're suspicious or just trying to figure out what kind of officer I am, but I had to go above and beyond. X-ray Tango said he liked initiative. He's getting it. Not that I'm going to cry another river if the levee fails. It's just not going to happen on my watch, or in my view.
Post looked out the tent flap. The drizzle had finally stopped.
Back on the old Thunderbolt, I swore I'd never wear their uniform or help them again. But I'm killing myself to save racks of shells so they can be fired on my new side. It gets stuck in my craw, Val.
Have the men said anything?
Not even jokes, at least in my hearing. They're scared of giving anything away. I would be too, surrounded by an army and minus a gun.
They're working as hard as they would have if they'd been captured and put in a labor camp.
And they're better fed. I've been over to the prison camp.
Who looked like someone had just stepped on his corns.
When were you there?
Day after we got here. I asked for a review of female prisoners.
Post was easier to read than a billboard at 10 feet.
Your wife?
I always figured she headed here. It was the nearest freehold to Mississippi.
Well, you'll drive yourself crazy if you start searching every face for her. I've had a person in my life, was in my life. She's caught up in this somewhere, but if I start thinking about her, I won't be able to concentrate. I have responsibilities now.
Post looked at him sidelong.
Where was she last?
A village called Weaning, just west of Crowley's.
Only human to hope.
Being human is a luxury, at least these days. Feelings, attachments, they stop you from doing what's necessary. Someone called Amu told me I wouldn't be one anymore when I became a wolf. I must have misunderstood what he was talking about.
How long have we known each other, Val?
What, a year and a half? Since I came on board the Thunderbolt.
You're the most human person I've known since my wife. Except when you do what's necessary.
Post meant by this the wild night when the Reapers came up from the old Kurian submarine, and after sinking it, Valentine had shot the submarine's sailors struggling in the oily water. Valentine's emotions turned gray and cold whenever he remembered. Valentine wondered if he could unburden himself, confess to not just the things he'd done, but worse, that he'd enjoyed, even reveled in.
Colonel! Colonel!
The shout even overcame Ankah's metalwork. Valentine cast a regretful look at his bunk.
Come in. What is it, Lieutenant Purcell?
The company officer saluted, gasping.
I overheard on the radio, sir. Blue Mountain Dam's gone.
Oh, Christ.
Gorillas blow it.
Just went.
Mr. Post, get everyone up. I don't care if they've just spent 12 hours shoring sandbags. Everyone to the levee. If Mrs. Smalls had her baby, I want her holding sandbags open. If it's a boy, I want him shoveling. Mr. Purcell, if the general doesn't know it, pass the word along. I respectfully suggest that he empty the prison compound and get those buckets of lard at the wire. Wait, strike the last.
Pass the word to the general.
Don't bother, Mr. Purcell. Just run.
Valentine looked around the little tent, touching the leather sack at his chest. It might as well all be swept away. But what about the quickwood?
Ankah!
He called out as he pulled on his tunic.
Yes, my David.
Have the men bring the quickwood to the levee. We'll use it to shore up. If it gives way, have everyone grab on.
Valentine and Ankah raced up and down the camp, gathering the men and deflating the tents by pulling out the quickwood center poles. He and the men ran to the levee, carrying the 4x4 beams in earnest rather than for exercise. Stiakowski was already putting the men to work. At other parts of the levee, men were gathering, and Valentine walked the length, giving orders regardless of whose section it was. Farther back, General X-Ray Tangle was organizing troops and prisoners alike, directing the flow of manpower to the dike. The levee was already a sandbag sieve. Even Hank stood in the water, helping maneuver shoring timber against the sandbag wall. Farther down the levee, a camouflage-painted bulldozer growled as it battled with the river, pushing walls of dirt against the drainage channel. Valentine's men worked for hours, taking only handfuls of cold water from the river for refreshment. It was a blur of sandbagging and shoring for Valentine, all the while watching the debris-filled river as he slogged through the water on the other side of the levee. Darkness came, and still the river ran mad. Men began to drop to their knees in the water in exhaustion.
We're losing it.
Post watched Stiakowski, up to her waist in water, directing shoring efforts.
I think it's gonna go.
Valentine felt a personal animosity toward the river. It was like a living thing, determined to overcome him no matter how hard he drove himself and his men. Shouts and a scream. He spun to see a crowd jumping back from the levee, where part of a sandbag wall had collapsed.
Get that bulldozer over here!
Valentine rushed to the site, Ankah joining him from the other side of the breach. A waterfall was coming through a notch in the levee. Something had given way at the bottom and it had subsided.
She's trapped, sir. It caught her on the legs as she fell.
Who?
Stiakowski. Captain, Stiakowski. It started to bulge and she dumped in with a soaring timber. She was trying to place it.
Valentine plunged into the swirling waters at the base of the fall and began to feel around for her. He submerged. Under the water, he felt a frantic hand grasp his. He pulled, but her body didn't yield. He felt around and touched her face. Keeping a grip on her hand, he surfaced. Through cascading water, he looked up at the worried faces.
Christ, get some of these bags away. I can feel her down there.
That'll open the breach.
It's already opening.
Ankah plunged in next to him as Valentine shifted his back to protect Stiakowski from the sandbag sliding off the pile. He felt her hand spasm in his. The golden one tore into the pile, hurling sandbags right and left. Others jumped in beside.
No, Warren, more to your right. She's under here. Ankah, pull away just above my elbow. Watch your feet, you!
The bulldozer approached, digging in and pushing a wall of dirt toward the rescuers.
Hold that machine, damn it! I've got a man trapped!
Out of the way, sir! Or when the breach caves, you'll be trapped too!
Valentine felt Stiakowski's hand go limp in his.
What's going on?
X-Ray Tango was coming around the mound of dirt pushed by the bulldozer.
She's trapped. Officer Wagner.
How long has she been under?
5 minutes, maybe.
She's dead, then.
Bring that bulldozer forward.
No, I've got her hand!
Wait, Sergeant.
Valentine met his eyes, pleading with him. X-Ray Tango shifted his gaze to the bulldozer, held up a hand, then to Valentine.
Hurry, Lassane!
Ankat plunged into the water and found the shoring timber Stiakowski had been maneuvering. Valentine watched the Grog's back, matted fur shedding water, and saw muscles heave. The pile shifted. Knotted shoulders breached, and Ankat took a breath.
Help me, you bastards!
Valentine felt something give. Valentine heaved at the lifeless hand, terribly limp in his. She began to move. He prayed she didn't have compound fractures in her trapped legs. She'd end up looking like Narcisse, even if she wasn't paralyzed. Anxious arms helped him bring her up out of the water. Valentine laid her out on the mound of dirt pushed up by the bulldozer.
Work the breach! Back to work!
The men and a smattering of prisoners started relaying sandbags. The bulldozer backed off and approached again from a new direction, digging into the ground. Valentine saw none of it. There was just Stiakowski, pale and limp beneath him, blue-faced and mottled-cheeked. He cleaned the froth from her mouth. Anka knelt next to Stiakowski, water streaming from his body.
Push on her legs and get the water out of her lungs!
Valentine lifted his ear from Stiakowski's chest. He bent back her head.
That doesn't work. Get a blanket, a dry one.
He turned her head up, explored her mouth with a finger, and put his lips to hers.
Get a medic, too!
Anka, push on her chest, here.
Valentine indicated a spot.
Don't be gentle about it.
He pressed his lips to her cold mouth again. The golden one worked her heart.
Should we rub her hands and feet?
No!
He was too busy to explain that it would draw blood away to the skin. She needed it in her brain, not her limbs. Minutes in the wet dark passed, or perhaps just seconds, hours. The only thing that mattered to Valentine were breaths. Air into Stiakowski's flooded lungs. Whatever time it took to run and get blankets had passed, the soldier returned with an armload. Her eyes fluttered and opened. Valentine rolled her on her side, and a mass of water and vomit came up. He held Stiakowski through a series of racking coughs, pulling blankets around her. Finally, the coughing ebbed.
Stiakowski!
Behind him, the bulldozer was pushing the mountain of sandbags back into place. Valentine heard a beam snap and winced. He hoped that wasn't one of the quickwood supports smashed. Stiakowski turned her face to see who was holding her.
God!
Valentine pressed his lips to hers, shutting her up. X-Ray Tango turned away, perhaps embarrassed, and began to shout orders to the men helping the bulldozer. Valentine released her from the kiss.
Dreams.
What's that?
Dreams. A wall fell on me, and I had dreams or something. It was warm and pleasant. Like I was being held by my mother as a baby. And then I woke up, and you were there. Except my legs hurt.
A medic knelt at her feet. He ran his hands up her right leg, gently rolling it. He repeated with the left, and Stiakowski cried out.
There's a break. I don't think it's bad. Simple fracture. I don't feel any protrusions. We've got to get her on a stretcher.
Ugh, it's throbbing. Am I bleeding?
The medic splinted her.
It's the fibula, I think. Her knees tore up too. Abrasions.
Valentine looked at her legs.
No, you're wet. You're not bleeding. Not badly. Bring the stretcher here.
The medic finished fixing the splint. Valentine took her shoulders and the medic her legs and lifted her onto the stretcher. Two men took up the handles.
The infirmary at headquarters. There's no hurry. Don't jog her.
You can go too, Lassane.
X-Ray Tango appeared at his shoulder.
Your captain there has things in hand.
The breach?
God knows.
Then I'll stay.
Like a close-fought battle, or a football match where the lead changes hands, the issue hung in doubt until the next morning, when once again the water stabilized. Then it fell, at a pace that could almost be measured with the naked eye.
I wonder if something gave way farther down the river.
Valentine and Post were eating bread and cheese with dirty fingers as they sat together on a ready pile of sandbags.
Some old Corps of Engineers dike. Our Pine Bluff Landing is underwater now.
He was too tired to care about the whys. All that mattered were the whats. And the big what was that the water was going down. The men were asleep in the mud all around, heads cushioned on sandbags or backpacks. The scattered groups of prisoners slept in huddles, like wallows full of pigs.
You gotta check on Stiakowski, sir?
We should see about reorganizing the men. Work out some shifts. Wish we'd get some fresh bodies from the other side of the river.
Oh, you know, they have problems of their own. The river rats are flooded out.
River rats? I've heard that before somewhere.
The boatmen who work the barges and small craft. They got a little town over there from what they tell me. Couple of bars, music and girls included, slop house. Bonafide Red Lake District sounds like. Some of the other soldiers go across for a good time or to do a little black market trading. They smuggle too, of course.
The soldiers or the river rats?
Both, I suppose.
I was wondering where X-Ray Tango got his coffee. Being in the Caribbean spoiled me. Got a taste for the stuff now.
I'm ready to go back. You're probably right. I'll never find her.
Southern Command's not dead yet. There's Stiakowski to think of, too.
Go check on her, if you like. Anka and I will hold the dike.
Stiakowski was asleep, her leg already in a cast, and after speaking to a nurse about her, Valentine made himself comfortable. She was the only one occupying a bed in the infirmary. The real field hospital was on the other side of the river, in the old library. The nurses were keeping busy, bandaging bashed fingers and wrapping sprains. A ruptured man groaned as the doctor probed his crotch. Valentine made the mistake of putting his feet on her bed. The next thing he knew, he was being kicked in the leg.
Colonel? You're snoring.
He massaged the bridge of his nose until his eyes felt like focusing again.
Is it light out? How's the pain?
Better. He gave me a shot and I went out like a light. Codeine or morphine, I think. It's morning now. We're still in the dispensary, so I guess the levee held.
The water was receding last night.
New Columbia lives.
His stomach growled.
Aren't they gonna feed you something? Wait, I'll go myself.
After retrieving bread, honey, and some kind of cooked cereal from the headquarters kitchen, he returned to Stiakowski.
You broke a leg once, sir?
No. Wasn't for lack of trying.
You limp? I thought maybe that...
An old wound. Line of duty.
Stiakowski nodded.
You'll have to tell the story someday.
When you're better.
That'll be the day. I'm always down with something. If it's not a cold, I've got a fever.
There was a long pause in the conversation while they ate. Valentine had never shared a meal in silence with a woman before. She probably needed to sleep again.
Can I get you anything before I go, Wagner?
She shook her head, and Valentine relaxed a little, seeing her respond to her assumed name, even under the influence of the painkiller.
No, thank you, sir. There is, one thing, though.
What's that?
Stiakowski glanced around the infirmary.
What's the policy here? Do they shoot the crippled horses, or send them somewhere else?
Don't be silly. You're not getting out of my outfit that easy. I'm not gonna let anything happen to anyone in my command. Especially to someone hurt doing her duty. The battalion's not going anywhere without you.
She sank back into her pillow.
Thanks, Colonel.
I'll see if I can get you put back in your tent. You'll be more comfortable there, I think.
Thank you, sir. But not just for that.
Valentine arched an eyebrow. She blushed and buried her face in her mush bowl.